Welcome to the 12-Step Recovery Evolution podcast. Visit recoveryevolution.co.uk for more episodes, helpful resources, and links to our social media. Also visit the site for information on how you can attend a future Zoom session or workshop live. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. We can talk about fear today, so I think that's probably a good subject to focus on for a little while. I was thinking over the weekend what I was going to do this week, and we've sort of talked through different bits of the book and different defects of character, but then I always come back to fear because I think even from the beginning of my journey, if somebody would have said, "What's wrong with you?" I probably couldn't have told them because I'd have been too embarrassed and probably didn't even have the language. But if I'd have thought about it, I probably would have said, "I'm frightened. That I have a lot of fear in my life." And so again, that's part of, well, it's a massive part of this program, and learning to identify and, you know, overcome and learn to manage and deal with fear is really going to determine the quality of your life and your spiritual experience. So the word fear is a massive subject. And it's something that's so important to continually understand the depth of fear, that how deep that it penetrates into each of our lives, how often it goes unchecked, even though it's a constant companion to most of us. Like I say, fear's never left my life, and it always seems to be the stumbling block, and it always seems to be the thing that I have to deal with when I are trying to make a change or identify that there's an avenue of reality that's been denied me. But what's blocking the door is usually fear that says, "Don't pass this way." And it works well on me when I let it. But, and again, when you identify fears and you learn, you know, it's still not always easy to overcome them. And again, it is, it does come in many forms. So it's a big part of the big book, but it always did kind of surprise me how little they do actually talk about it, considering how probably, you know, I guess that when I'm talking to people over the years and including myself, it's probably, you're either probably talking about resentments, and most of them are coming from fear, or you're just talking about plain fear. And so considering how destructive it is, so that I think maybe, I don't know, I think I'm going to try and spend as much time this week talking about fear as till we think that, I feel satisfied that you've got at least a reasonable understanding of it, and that you can get your pen and paper, and that you can start writing down some of your fears, and start working on them and overcoming them. So we're going to read from page 67 to start, which this is, as you're going through your steps, this is kind of step, trying to get you to build your step four. And again, look, I've done quite a few step fours, and the kind of the goal that I'm trying to get to today about the kind of understanding that I got after doing probably kind of countless step four and fives. It was probably only 10 years ago or maybe 12 years ago when I was writing the program for East Coast Recovery that I started to write the worksheet for step four, that I kind of noticed what it was actually asking me. So then I would have been in the program for almost sort of 20 years, not full of fear and fighting fear most of my life, but doing loads of steps, but not really having a good understanding of fear. So I'm going to share that with you when we get to that point. But so we're going to be looking on page 67. It's the last paragraph. And it says, notice the word fear. When it says notice the word fear, it's talking about on page 65 that it does a layout of how you should lay out your fourth step. And so it's just saying, if you have a quick look at that, that you'll notice that even though it's about resentments and what it affects, it says, notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer and the wife. So what he's saying there ultimately is that notice that the word fear is connected to each one of them resentments. He's saying the short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. Now, again, all I could say is that coming on 3 decades of being in this program, I can absolutely concur with that, that fear has certainly been a constant companion, and it seems to be involved in every negative area of my life. And it says it is an evil and corroding thread. Now, Bill was a bit of a writer, and again, I can't say why he wrote these words, but you can't get a lot more extreme than that in my book. Whatever words you want to use, but to say it's an evil and corroding thread, it's like that's probably about as extreme as it can get. He said the fabric, again, it's another extreme word. It's the very, essence of who I am, of our existence, was shot through with it. So again, you can just sort of flick through and read a book, but then again, what I'm trying to do here and what I've learned myself is to take the magnitude of what this is actually saying to me. And the magnitude of it is, I mean, if somebody come in and said you got cancer and the fabric of your existence is shot through with it, that should probably cause you to have a panic attack. But it's the same with this fear. And fear is a cancer in your life. He said it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, which is kind of there, that sort of saying that most of us are acting on fear, that fear actually acts us out. Now, we kind of know that. I think gangsters know that, government know that, parents know that, bullies know that anyone knows if they want to control you or anybody, they have to install fear in you. Now, if you've got no fear in you, you cannot be controlled. So if you're being controlled or you want to control anybody, maybe you're a controller, then you have to install fear in them. So if you've got fear in you, you're being controlled. Period. Whether it's by somebody else, something else, but certainly talking about this illness and this disease, this cunning, baffling and powerful sickness, if you've got fear in you, then this can control you. And you're probably, a lot of the decisions that you're making when you control people, you want them to make certain decisions. So when you look at the decisions that you've made in your life that are based on fear, then you can expect them to lead you to a place where you're going to miss your fortune. And you're going to end up in a place where obviously nobody wants to miss fortune. I want my fortune hit me square on the chin. If there's fortune to be had, I certainly don't want it to miss me. So it says, but did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. So again, it's a pretty emphasizing the seriousness of having fear. So it says we reviewed our fears thoroughly. And again, that's something that you should be doing if you've done a step five, or you didn't do that when you did a step five. It's something that I'd highly recommend now, that from this moment on, that fear is not just going to get away with running your life for you. That when you're feeling fear, you're going to capture it and look at it. Now, fear comes in many different forms. And some of them forms we kind of overlook. You know, we might even minimalize, you know, like being shy. Being shy is fear. And it'll rob you. Because you're not going to put yourself in certain positions. So if there's something that you feel like you want to do in your life, but it means you may get embarrassed if you go and do it, then the embarrassment overrides your desire to do whatever it is you want to do, then you've been robbed. So embarrassment, anxiety, worry. Should have probably made a list before I come on here today, but anxiety, worry, you know, shyness. You know, maybe as we go through the week, I will get a bit of a better list. But fear comes in lots of different ways, and a lot of them can be kind of overlooked. But, you know, that's why it's important that we review our fears. But again, we've got to be honest about what our fears are. I always find this is quite a good one. And I find this in a lot of people, but again, I don't really often hear people talk about this, but it's the fear of looking stupid. Now, that fear of looking stupid is so damaging. I've had that a lot of my life. It can make people really aggressive, made me really aggressive. It still does. When I feel stupid, if you make me feel stupid and you're having a bad day, I'm going to be aggressive towards you. But see, I've seen that fear. I'll give you an example. I think one of the best sort of examples I've had of it in somebody else was this guy who'd been in recovery for 10 years. This was probably 10, 15 years ago. And he'd been in recovery 10 years. He drove a big fancy car. He had a big fancy house. And when he come and started coming to our step groups, he'd never really done his steps. But he kept doing this behavior where, and this is the reason why he was there, that he would build his life up, and then all of a sudden he would just quit his job. And then he would throw his whole family into panic and chaos, and his children were full of anxiety, and his wife was full of anxiety, and so it sort of, we started to take him through the steps, and it started to come up that he was resentful at his wife because she didn't understand, and again, as we started to hone in on what was really going on, as we started to do thorough infantry on him, and about why did he just keep quitting his jobs, and he would start saying. He would start naming resentments. Well, my boss said I couldn't park my car here. And then my boss said I couldn't do this. And then they said I couldn't do that. And I don't feel like it's for me. And what he was he worked on really large building projects as a project manager. And so as we kept following that trail and getting rid of them resentments and going a little bit deeper to find out, you know, and then he got to this point. He's like, why do you actually quit the job though? When you know, just because your boss don't let you park here, and then you quit your job and you've got no money and you throw your whole family into chaos and you keep doing it. You keep doing it. They all just settle down again. I mean, he's not drinking. He's not taking drugs. And his whole family settled down again. And then just as they all settle down again and start feeling comfortable, he quits his job again, and he doesn't go to another job. He just quits. And then they go into debt again. And then his family start attacking him, and he starts attacking them. And again, somebody's taking their mic off. Whoever, can you just check your mics are on, guys. And then, so as we got closer to it, he's like, "Well, why did you quit?" And it took a little bit of time because he kept coming up with his reasons. And I'm like, "That's not really a reason. That's not really a reason. That's not really a reason." And then one day he come back, he went, he said, "I've never said this to anybody before." He said, "Because it makes me feel like it's almost like unbearable. It's like I can't even tell you." And I said, "Mate, tell me." He said, "The reason that I quit my job is that I can't read the plans." I'm like, "What?" He said, "Well, I can read them up to a certain point, but," he said, "there's always gets to this point where I just, the anxiety starts growing. And when it comes to a certain point of reading these plans, I just start having this panic. And then I start getting resentful. And then I start getting angry." He said, "And then I just quit because I don't want to look stupid." Now, he never actually was able to see that without going through the steps. But that fear of looking stupid was just totally devastated his life. And it had been devastating his life for many years. Now, when he actually discovered it, the amends were simple. Tell him you don't know how to read the plans. Well, go and learn how to read the plans. And then that would remove the fear. So he'd been robbed all his life through fear. But when you actually start looking through your fear list and thoroughly start tracing it back, you do actually start noticing how much damage it does in your life. So it says, "We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves, why we had them? Wasn't it because self-reliance had failed us? Self-reliance was as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other when it made us cocky or worse." It says, "Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God." So again, this is sort of presuming that you're sort of working through your steps. You've given your life over to care of God as you understand Him. But He's saying that we're now going to go over to this different basis. Now, the reason this is what a bit I didn't get at the beginning is that this word infinite and finite. Now, and I'm just going to back up a little bit because, again, I just want you to acknowledge this as well. That if you're a warrior, it means you're pretty much practicing these principles. If you have a lot of anxiety in your life, it's because you're good at these principles. Because you are, if you've got a lot of resentment, there's no reason you know, we often think that you need to completely redevelop your brain, and sometimes I may even give that impression myself. But I think the thing is, you've already got a pretty good network going on for visualization. Because if you think about a resentment, and somebody does you some harm or does something wrong, you think how many times you visualize that situation. Think how many times you go over it and go over it and go over it and go over it. And that's kind of like meditating. It's just this contemplative meditation. If you're a warrior, it means that you're taking a situation and you're going over it and over it and over it and over it. So you have developed the capacity to do visualization, but we're doing it on negatives. And I think what this is saying is that when we're actually doing that mental process from ourselves, we're doing it in a very finite way. Now, the trouble with that is the word finite means limited or end. So we run over situations in our mind, but in a very limited way. And when you've got fear, if you think now in your own minds of a fear that you may have, and how much you think about it, and how much you go over it in your mind, but then you, if you can see that what your mind is telling you, that there's an end, whether if I say this to them, they're going to leave me, that's the end. If I go here, then I'm going to die, that's the end. If I do this, I'm not going to have enough. That's the end. So when actually we're in that self-worrying, when we're in that finite, and so what really creates the fear is this end, this feeling of the end, that there's some doom, that there's going to be an end. You know, if I leave this job, then I'm not going to get another one. It's the end. If I leave this relationship, I'm not going to get another one. It's the end forever. It's finite. So it's kind of really good to understand that until, if we're in that finite, if we're putting an end on everything, then we're going to be in fear. So it says that self-confidence, self-reliance was as good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. For some of us, one said great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other when it made us cocky or worse. So it's saying perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. Now that different basis is, remember, the whole point of this kind of addiction thing in it, and it being a closed mind, is that we're trying to open up our mind. So we're trying to take we're trying to get our mind to open to different ideas, to open it up, to allow ourselves. And you know that when somebody's frightened and they go, oh, it's all going to go wrong, well, we kind of naturally do it. We try and take that end off of them. We try and say, well, you know, it ain't going to be that bad, or you're going to be all right. But when you're saying that, you're kind of giving them a possible different outcome that they're believing. You're offering them a different outcome. Now, if they're willing to open their mind and listen to what you're telling them, and they take their mind off of that closed-minded end outcome that they've created, and they're willing to at least take the end and believe in another possible avenue of reality that may open, which it possibly can when their mind opens, because they're allowing a new experience to come into their life. So it's saying this is the different basis, that we're going to stop trusting in this limited version of ourselves. We're going to stop trusting in this limited version of life. And we're going to take the end off. We're going to allow our mind to open to the infinite possibilities of life. So when we put our trust in God, we take the end off. And then these infinite possibilities start flooding in. Now, I've learned that in my life, that pretty much 90-odd percent of the fears that I've ever had never even come true. But man, I've got an incredibly powerful capacity for visualization, because I'm a warrior. But I've also got an incredible capacity for spirituality, because I've got a strong ability to visualize. Now, when I'm believing in that finite fear, I'm believing in something that doesn't exist, because most of the time it never happened. Worry is a pointless exercise. Literally, when I learned that worry is pointless. Worry does nothing. Worry is a fear that just keeps churning your brain around, and each time your brain churns around, you shoot some adrenaline or something like that into your system, some adrenaline or, you know, some other peptides that are designed to get me to run away and fight animals and stuff like that. And nothing's actually happening, or it's already happened, and I'm worrying about nothing. Well, not always worrying about nothing, because we can move on to that, but worrying and worrying and worrying, and it doesn't do anything. Worrying is like a loop. It's like a pointless loop. And all it does is pump your body with chemicals you really don't want in your body. So if you're a worrier like me, number one goal in life, learn to stop worrying. It's like self-abuse. That kind of fear is just tormenting. When I'm allowing myself to worry, I'm being hard on myself, and I'm tormenting myself, or I'm letting myself be tormented. And then no wonder I can get a bit grumpy and a little bit tired and a little bit, you know, depressed, because I'm allowing this pointless loop to torment me, and I emotionally abuse myself. And so there's a great reward for me, and I'm sure if that's you, to learn to stop doing that, to identify and stop it. Now, you know, going to meetings and telling people, and sometimes they soothe it, and that's fine, that's not a bad thing. But if you can overcome it, I'd rather overcome it. And so I've learned that when I can get my mind to start letting go of that finite and get my mind to start trusting in that infinite, the fear automatically goes away automatically. It's like as soon as I take the end off, I feel better automatically. And so I've learned that, you know, I don't want to meditate on the negatives. But now let's have a look and see some of the things that I've been frightened of, and some of the difficulties. Now, again, when you come from a bit of a dysfunctional background and you're not good at relationships and you're not good at things that you probably should be equipped to, and it leaves you feeling a bit inadequate because, you know, I'm not able. So, for example, one of the fears that I've always had is a fear of confrontation. Now, if you knew me, you'd think, oh, that don't look right. It looks like you quite like confrontation. But it's not something I do enjoy. And the deeper the feeling of care for somebody, or then maybe the more difficult that can become. But see, what I've learned is that even real resentment, I found that most of my resentments have been based on a fear of confrontation. Now, I'll tell you what I mean by that. What I mean by that is that somebody would do something to me. Now, as a grown up, you know, as a spiritual person, you know, as a whatever it is that I am, something in my stomach, my innermost self says, well, what they just did was wrong. Now, the world and the people were quite often wrong. Now, I'm angry. I'm sore. I'm burned up. Now, he's like, what are you going to do about it? You're going to stay angry? You're going to stay sore? And I'm probably going to go, well, I'm a bit afraid of confrontation, so maybe I'll just ignore him and go and slag him off to everybody until I feel better. Now, again, it's like that thing about going down the hospital, looking at people in wheelchairs to feel better. It works, but it ain't really something quite wrong about it, isn't there? So then I realised that, man, what they did really was wrong, and it hurt me. But coming from a dysfunctional background and knowing that quite a few people that you come across in this world are possibly dysfunctional, that is like, but if I go and say something to them, then maybe they're going to get angry at me. Maybe they're going to turn it back on me. And I don't like confrontation because it can get a bit out of control. And so what I found is that when I actually started looking deeper at my resentments, I started to realize, man, do you know what they did? That weren't really a big deal. But the fact I've got to go and tell them, that's a big deal. And so I felt more resentful that they created a situation that meant now the only way for me to resolve this situation is to go and talk to them. And I really can't stand or risk standing the way that I feel when I have to go and communicate with them. But if I don't communicate that stuff to people, then it's very hard to build a good relationship with them. Because again, we learn that how we stop being dysfunctional is that we learn to develop the capacity to do better quality communication. That I need to develop the capacity. If I don't ever want a relationship with you, I can walk away and think knob and don't worry about it again. But when it's the people in my life that I need to develop relationships with them, and again, none of them are perfect. I'm not perfect. I need to develop the capacity to be able to go and say, I just need to tell you how I feel. But when something I find offensive, now, again, it may just be something in me, it causes great turmoil in me. And with the other dysfunctional people in my life, we often make this agreement that we won't mention it because none of us really like. And you can often see in relationships where they don't really know how to communicate at any decent level of quality. And they usually end up having a shout and screaming match every couple of 3 weeks. And then they feel better after that. And then it's like clearing the air. And then it all builds up again. And then they have another screaming match. But what they never really did was never really addressed what was really going on. So they never developed a better form of communication. Now that's going to bring me misfortune because I want to develop deeper, better, clearer relationships with people. And my friends are the people that I can be completely honest with. They're the people that I can, you know, that I feel that I can trust to tell them the truth, even when I feel this, that maybe that truth may be something I need to tell them about them. And I need to trust that when I tell them that they're not going to attack me, that they're going to tell me, look, I think you're wrong, Lester. Or maybe you're right. Maybe there's something we can change here. Maybe there's an agreement and maybe we can build better relationships. But see, fear will stop me building better relationships. It'll rob me of doing that. So for me personally, learning about fear and learning to trust God has allowed me to go and talk to people. And it's not an easy thing. It's still not an easy thing. But I've been telling people for years, one of the greatest gifts I've learned from step 9 is, can we have a chat? You mind if I tell you how I feel? Because that makes me feel vulnerable. And I avoid that. And I know you avoid that with the people that you got problems with in your lives, especially parents, other family members, friends, and people that are close to you. It's very difficult when you've got that fear and that resentment. But see, this is where it really starts opening up. When you actually start understanding this process and working through it, what I realized through that process is who I'm really angry at is with myself. See, because that feeling of fear is actually inside me. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of, you know, it's been years since anybody's attacked me or I've had to attack them. But that uncomfortable feeling is what I'm really afraid of. Like I kind of, over the years, I've felt a little bit more of fear of flying. But I know the plane ain't going to crash. Or, you know, I mean, the chances of it crashing are minute. I like watching all the air crash investigations. And Pauline said, what are you watching that for? He's like, in actual fact, it's made me realise how safe planes are. But I don't think the plane's going to crash. But I just don't like the way I feel. Now, I could do a flight for 2 hours or 4 hours. But I'm not comfortable doing long haul flights because it makes me feel uncomfortable for a long time. Now, I'm working on that and I've flown all over the world. I'm not afraid of, you know, people attacking me, but I'm afraid of the way that I feel when I get into them emotional positions. So what I'm afraid of is the way I feel. So fear makes me afraid of myself. And then what that actually does is it causes me to reject myself. And as I reject myself, I'm rejecting you and I'm rejecting God. And what I discovered from that is when I reject myself and when I reject you and I reject God, I end up very lonely. Now, it was only when I started to practice this program and started to practice trying to tell people how I felt, then I started to allow them to share in my decision-making process. I didn't let people tell me what to do, but I let them become part of my decision-making process. And as I started to let them become part of my decision-making process, I started to notice I didn't feel lonely. But you know, the funny thing was, I didn't feel lonely consciously. But when I started doing this, I started to notice I didn't feel lonely. That sounds like a strange thing to say. It's like, oh, I realized I've been lonely all my life. But I didn't really feel it. But when I actually started doing this, when I started to then realize, hang on a minute, I don't feel lonely. I never knew I was lonely. And the only reason I knew I was lonely is when I started to not feel lonely. Weird, isn't it? I never even knew that I was lonely. And so fear robbed me of the most important things in my life, myself, my relationships with others, and my relationship with God. So when you've got in fear, you're going to be rejecting yourself. And so it says, some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. If we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Now, when I read that and then I think about what we read about chapter to the agnostics and the atheists and all that, this is kind of seems to me, and again, I like this. This suits me. I'm one of the more religious members. But when it says what it's saying here, it says that we're in the world to play the role of science. Now, that's the way that I kind of see myself. That's the way I kind of live my life, that, you know, exactly everything that we've been doing here and talking about is building this conscious contact so that I can put my mind into this other dimension, that I can go to this sixth sense. Not in when I'm in the finite, I'm only in the five senses. When I go into this infinite, I'm going into the sixth sense. I'm going into this instead of the three dimensions, the limited three dimensions of life, I'm going into the fourth dimension. That I'm getting this completely different angle. I'm getting this completely different way of looking at God. Now, I know that the world, they may show ways of dealing with your mind and getting over your fears and putting faith in yourself. I think that's the big thing these days. And look, it looks like to a degree it works to people in the finite, but it's not. I don't know how that's going to work out in the infinite. And I've got no way of telling you, because I kind of go along with what he's saying here, that just to the extent that we permit this, just to the extent that we do as we think, he would enable us and humbly rely on him. Does he enable me to match calamity with serenity? So I find a great peace in this belief in God. And, you know, again, it's something that I've practiced through pausing, waiting. You know, again, it's that, I'll read it as it goes down here. It says, we never apologize to anyone for depending on our creator. We can usually laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the age is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what we can do. And again, here's the prayer. We ask him to remove our fear. That's the solution. But I've got a lot more understanding about God to help me do that. And I honestly don't know any other way out of fear. And I'm somebody that really has suffered from fear all my life. But when I'm actually in my faith, when I'm actually believing in God, it doesn't mean, you know, for me, if using that example, that means that I'll have the courage, even though I still feel fear, I'll have the courage to go and speak to that person. And 9 times out of 10, it goes great. And the one time it don't go great, and they, you know, they feel offended or angry, then, you know, that's not really not I can do about that. And so, you know, in my life, getting this courage from God has allowed me to go and face a lot of my fears. And that's an ongoing thing. There's some fears now in my life that have just come up that I've not really avoided. They've just not, you know, I've just sort of reached a place in my life where, you know, I've got to deal with these fears if I want to pass down this avenue of reality. It means I've got to face some fears, and some of them fears are what I think about myself, what other people think about me. You know, and they're quite often fears that control me. Is, you know, I didn't realize what a people pleaser I can be. Again, it's not really people pleasing. I'm trying to please myself, trying to feel good. And it's kind of strange when you kind of realize it. You're like, mate, why do I want... This is the strange thing. It's like, because it just gets a little bit deeper the more you learn about this stuff. It's like, this group of people disagree with me. But why is it they're disagreeing with me such a problem for me? I don't even like this group of people. I don't hang around with them. Why do I want them to accept me? And that's the point, is why do I want them to accept me? And then when you follow that line of thought, it's like, well, no, it's because you don't accept yourself. Well, why don't I accept myself? Because you didn't feel good enough. And you just keep going down. And so the goal is, now I know that when them people disagree with me and start ranting at me, that I'll be sitting there, not in calamity, but I'll be sitting there in serenity. That I'll have peace in my mind. And then I know that I'll be free from that slavery, from that bondage, and I'll be able to pass. and I'll be able to go where I've never been before, boldly. Go where Leicester has never been before. Oh, bit Star Trek there. So that's what makes this wonderful. It's a real liberation, because fear is a real controller. Fear is slavery, fear is bondage, and we're in a time of fear now. And we need to be careful that we don't let too much of that fear get into us, and that we're not basing our decisions on fear. That doesn't mean I don't be careful and stuff like that. I'll tell you what, I got asked some years ago, I'll finish on this, I got asked to go to South Africa with this church, and they said, look, we're going to buy this building in Pietermaritzburg, and we know that you're a builder and you've got some knowledge in that. Would you like to come with us? And we're going to look at this 18 acre building, and it's got all these outbuildings, and we want to turn it into a school. We want to turn it into a place that helps people with addiction. We want to support children, and we want to do all this good work in this building. So I said, yeah, that'd be fantastic. They said, we're going to go for 3 weeks and we're going to move around and you can come with us. And so I said, yeah, great. So then I went and told people, I said, I've got to go to South Africa with this church to look at this building. And literally everybody I knew went, you're going to get murdered. You're going to get raped. Every set of traffic lights you stop at, they're going to pull you out of your car, rape you, murder and steal your trainers. Oh my God. I don't want to go there. I don't want any of that to happen to me. And I started to get instilled with fear. Now that stuff does happen there. And certainly when you go there, your life expectancy goes down a bit, especially when you're a 6 foot one and a half big white bloke. You stand out like a sore thumb. And I phoned my sponsor up, and after a while I said, Dave, I said, the church asked me to go to South Africa. I told them I'd go, but man, I don't think I want to go there anymore. I said, oh, I feel a bit too afraid. And he went, well, why are you going there? I said, well, I was going with the church to, and I told him all the reasons. He went, hang on a minute. He said, all them reasons that you told me you ain't going there, they're all the reasons you actually are going there. You're going there to stop all of that, help stop all that stuff happening. And he said, are you going for God, or are you not going to go for the fear? And as soon as I put God back in the picture and thought, you know what, I'm actually going there on behalf of God. I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. And so even though I was afraid, I went anyway. And when I went there, I went to places where there's drug problems like you wouldn't believe. Honestly, there was drug problems like you just would not believe. I'd never seen anything like it. And while I was there, I set up NA meetings. I did groups every day for a couple of weeks with them all. I helped churches set up little ministries. And I did all of this work that I believe that God had me do and the reason that he sent me there. And if I'd let that fear stop me, then none of that would have probably happened, at least not with me doing it. Somebody would have sent somebody else. So when it says we are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to what extent do we mean, as we think he would match us, as he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending on our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means of courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what we can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. So that motivation of God has allowed me to outgrow fear. And the new fears that I face are bigger than any fears I've ever faced before. And on my own, I will not be able to meet them. They will make me stand still and they will turn me back. But I'm going to do everything that I can that I've learned from this book of my faith to stand in the face of the fear and keep moving forward until I outgrow it. Because that's the freedom that I've been given from God.